Hey everyone, I'm Tony Hardman, your host for Not Quite Zen, a podcast about struggling with mental health and finding ways to make life better. I've struggled with mental health all my life, but through lots of therapy and hard work, I've learned how to be calmer, happier, and more grounded. And I hope that this show can do the same for you. So without further ado, let's get started. Welcome back to Not Quite Zen, and hello to any new listeners. As always, if you haven't already, go to notquitezen.co and sign up for my newsletter. Every Tuesday, you'll get the latest from Not Quite Zen and amazing mental health content from around the web. Today, I'm excited to bring you a fantastic and motivating guest. Kevin Palmieri grew up in a broken home without a lot of money. He didn't meet his father until the age of 27. No doubt, these were contributing factors to the anger he experienced in his everyday life, something I'm sure many of us can relate to, myself included. Eventually, he got to a point where he didn't think life was worth living. When he shared this feeling with a loved one, he was encouraged to seek therapy, but as a self-described tough guy, he didn't think he needed it. However, he was motivated by the perceived pain of losing this person, so he went to that first appointment with vulnerability. For Kevin, the experience was transformative, and he learned how to grow and move past his abandonment issues. Eventually, he felt empowered enough to overcome his fears and start a podcast. He's now the CFO of Next Level University, a global top 100 podcast and near seven-figure business. And he's teaching others how to make progress in their lives through consistency and tackling fears with no bullshit. Kevin has been one of my favorite people to interview so far, so I hope you enjoy our conversation. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Tony, absolutely. If our conversations behind the scenes have been any indication, we're going to be hopefully quite zen today.
Yeah, we'll try. That's what we always try for. So with that in mind, why don't we just dive right in? I would love to start with you, if you're comfortable. Tell me about your struggle with mental health and kind of like, what was life like before that and how you got to that point?
Yeah, it's interesting because, and I don't know if this is everybody else's experience as well and yours, Tony, but I never knew I was struggling with it until I kind of crossed the chasm of, oh yeah, there's definitely got to be something wrong here. There was a line in the sand for me that definitely made me realize it. So
just
for context, I grew up in a single family household. I was raised by my mom and my grandmother. I didn't meet my dad until I was 27. And I think that for me, that probably caused a lot of anxiety that I never realized I had.
For sure.
I had a lot of anger issues. I remember I used to punch CD cases because they would make me bleed the most. I enjoyed that. I don't know why.
I bet I could take a stab at why. I have abandonment issues with my father. I knew who he was, but he wasn't really in my life. So I totally get where you're coming from. But yeah, keep going. I want to hear more.
Yeah, of course. So I think the first time that I really understood that I had any issues or any struggles or any problems with mental health was I remember I was living in Boston, Mass. I lived with my girlfriend at the time, and we lived with another couple. And we lived in this really nice apartment. Like, I think this apartment was like $3,000 a month or something. It was really nice. And we split it with this other couple. And I remember that everybody was gone for the day and I had the day off of work and we had the loft. We had the third floor loft. And I remember sitting in bed, just thinking to myself, I don't know if I want to be here anymore. I wasn't having like suicidal thoughts. I didn't have a plan or anything, but I remember thinking, if this is what life is, I don't know if I want to do it. It's just like, it's just boring. It's gray. I don't know what I'm doing. This is terrible. I don't know if I want to be a part of this. That was the first time for me.
Yeah. You bring up something really interesting. I want to jump in here real quick, because I think that's something a lot of people don't understand, is there is really a big difference between suicidal thoughts and like actively thinking I want to kill myself versus like, I don't care if I die. I don't really want to be here. Like, I wouldn't fight it. Like, I don't have a problem with death. And those are two like signs of depression, like I would say pretty severe depression, but there is a distinction there. So I wanted to point that out. It's interesting that you say that.
It's almost like passive and active. It's like passively, I just didn't have a desire to be here as a human being anymore, but actively I wasn't really planning on doing anything about it. And so what I did And I think this is very important. And one of the other through lines of my story is I'm very blessed because I have very supportive people in my life. And I know that's a blessing and I'm very lucky and not everybody has that. But I remember when my girlfriend came home from work, I kind of explained it to her and I was terrified. I was like, am I broken? What does this mean? And she said, Kev, I think you should go to therapy. And I was like, come on, I'm not going to go to therapy. Like, I don't need therapy. I'm tough. I don't need that. And, you know, her and I talked through it. And I ended up finding a therapist, and I'll never forget driving in Boston. Number one is a giant pain in the butt. And I'm trying to find parking on this main street and I'm parallel parking and I got to find the meter and it's an app and it's this whole thing.
There goes your anxiety right there.
Right? My anxiety is already high and I'm sweating through my clothes. And I remember I go into this old building because it's Boston. So there's a lot of old buildings and it's this spiral staircase that's up into like the heights of this building. And I remember when I walked in, I was like, I don't even know if I can do this. Like, I'm definitely going to cry 100%. I don't know this therapist. I've never met her before. I don't know what this is even going to do. I don't think this is going to work. And I'll never forget after I left that first session, I remember thinking to myself, that was awesome. I'm so glad I did that. I cried. I bawled my eyes out, but I felt safe. I felt supported. I felt impact in the vulnerability. I felt like me opening up was something that was just so overdue. And I ended up going to therapy for a while. I ended up moving from Boston to New Hampshire. When I moved to New Hampshire, I got another therapist. And then I ended up traveling a lot for work. So I kind of fell off with it. But it's one of the best things I've ever done in my entire life. And I always try to say that to people of, look, I did not heal or fix my problems myself. I've had so much external help that I would be doing you a disservice if I didn't at least bring it up.
There's a lot to unpack there. You said some really interesting things. So I think one thing I want to go into is I think a lot of men in particular had an aversion to therapy. That's actually not something that I can relate to. I did seek it out when I was younger, but a lot of guys that I've talked to do have that aversion. And I also know from personal experience and from other men that I've spoken with, it is harder to open up and be more vulnerable. And I think men especially are more likely to attach to avoidance issues. So like, what was the process of getting over that like for you? Kind of what spurred that change and how, like, what enabled you to open up?
I think that I connected, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose my girlfriend. I really think that the pain of not doing it was greater than the pain of me doing it. There was some sort of loss to be there. And I think that helps. I really do believe that's something that helps human behavior in general. I mean, the perceived pain of not doing something has to be greater than the discomfort of doing it. And I think I really leaned into that and said, look, I'm going to lose everything if I don't do this.
That's a really good point. And one of the things that I talk about a lot, and I bet you probably would subscribe to a similar philosophy, is that when it comes to goals or like doing anything in your life, you really have to understand the why behind it. You know, and in acceptance commitment therapy, we always talk about what's your core value, find your core value, and then take committed action toward that, which is essentially what you did in practice without knowing it 100%. So that's interesting. And the other thing I want to unpack from what you said earlier, talking about first going to therapy, is you said, when I moved, I was busy and I stopped for a little bit and then I restarted. That's such a great thing to note, because it really is like this. It doesn't have to be a lifelong journey, but it is a process, and it's not something that happens like overnight. I know, you know, for me, in my experience, you know, I went to CBT, I voluntarily went to anger management, like I went to ACT therapy. And then every time you do this new type of thing, it's like unlocking a new level. Like, if life is a simulation, we're in a video game, like, that's how you level up, really, is kind of like learning these new strategies. So was that kind of a similar experience for you?
Yeah, 100%. What it said to me is, you're not broken. That was always my thought, is like, I am broken. Growing up in a broken home, right? Growing up without money, broken. I think that I didn't feel normal. I felt different than everybody else because that was one of the identities I adopted. In going and having somebody else say, this is fine. This is not that big of a deal. I mean, they didn't say that. Obviously, they didn't minimize it, but it's not the end of the world for you. It doesn't mean you're broken. It doesn't mean you can't grow through this. I think that having somebody who has experienced other people's stories tell you that it's going to be okay. It was just super helpful. It was supportive. It made me feel like I could actually make progress. I think that Human beings must have three beliefs to take a new action. They must believe it is humanly possible. They must believe it is possible for them. And this is the biggest one that I don't think a lot of people have. They must believe it will be worth it. After I went to therapy the first time, I knew it would be worth it. And so much, in fact, so I've been a broke entrepreneur for the last, we started making money a couple of years ago, but before that, I was a very broke entrepreneur. I didn't have health insurance. So now I have health insurance. I got my doctor's visits and all that taken care of. I will be looking for a new therapist or counselor. Even though I feel great, I feel the best I ever have in my life, there's parts of yourself that when you learn, you can connect the dots and say, ah, that is why I have that behavior. So I'm looking at it more from a empowerment standpoint than maybe a rehabilitation standpoint.
I love that perspective because I've gone through a similar experience within the past year, I would say, is because I think once you start the process and you go and you do the work and you kind of get to that baseline level, like, okay, like I got my head right. Like I'm doing much better with anxiety. I'm doing much better with depression. I'm starting to make progress in my life. Then you can like I said, like level up and uncover these nuggets of things that you may not have understood were the power behind some of the things you did. Like, you know, for example, for me, I figured out in therapy probably 6 to 8 months ago that like I was super career driven and worked really hard in college and did all these things in my life because I knew consciously that I was terrified of being homeless. But the question was why? Like, why was that a fear when I grew up in a relatively stable home? It was because of the abandonment issues. And it took, you know, going through that process to finally figure that out.
One of the things that really helped me, and I definitely struggled with a lot of abandonment as well, but I'll never forget this, Tony. This was such an important thing for me in my life. I remember I was sitting in my recliner and I was just going through Facebook and I didn't know, and this was probably 5 years ago, I didn't know that Facebook had a folder for people who you weren't friends with, that if they DM'd you, it would go to this folder, kind of like a request folder.
Yeah.
Didn't know that was a thing.
I'm
going through this request folder and I see this message and it says, hey, I'm blank. I'm your father's girlfriend. And that was the only part of the message I saw. And I was like, I remember I immediately started crying. I was like, okay, what is happening here? I open this message up. And that's what the first line was. Hey, it's blank. I'm your father's girlfriend. He wanted me to let you know that he has seen you on Facebook and he is proud of you. And if you would like, he would love the opportunity to meet up with you and grab lunch. And I remember I threw my phone on the floor. I fell on the floor and started crying.
Wow.
Because for most of my life, I just hard-assed it and said, I don't have a dad and I don't care. I don't even care if he's alive. And for the first time, I had to look at that. I had to really face that. And I remember I messaged one of my friends and I said, hey, my dad messaged me and I think I have to go see him. And my friend said, do you want me to come with you? I said, no, I have to do this by myself. And I remember I went to a diner. I sat down, didn't even know what my dad's name was, didn't know what he looked like. And I remember I saw a man walk by the window and I said, that's my dad. Don't know how I knew, but I knew that was my dad. He came in, he found me and we sat down and we had a conversation. It wasn't anything too deep or too intense, but he was crying and it was this thing for me. And I ended up seeing him a couple times after that. All that did for me was it allowed me to have empathy. You know what? When I was conceived as a child, I doubt he knew what the hell was going on in life, right? It was younger than I am now. So would I be ready for a child at that age? Yes, I like to think I would have handled things differently, of course. But it allowed me to have empathy, which allowed me to eliminate a lot of that anger. And I had somebody ask me that question recently. They said, what did that do for you? And it's somebody who has a very similar situation. And I said, I'm telling you, you got to go see this person because what it's going to do is you're going to realize they are just a human being that has their own garbage who never handled it. And you're going to realize that you're putting so much emphasis and so much power into this person's hands and they don't deserve it and they're not capable of having it. That's what it did for me. And that helped my mental health journey a ton.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So not quite similar, but in my experience, you know, he's always been kind of on the periphery of my life, my father, but we've never had like a deep connection or consistent communication. But there was a time, I want to say around 2012, where we did have a conversation and you know, he apologized for everything he did and stuff. And I accept, you know, accepted his apology and I forgave him. And that's true. Like, I do forgive him, you know, it's, I don't hold a grudge for him, but I think no matter how much you can forgive somebody, there's just certain things that are maybe hard to get over is not the right word, but there's things that are going to stick with you and kind of shape who you are in certain ways. I think there's always going to be things for me that I'm going to always do because of that abandonment. And it's not just him. There's issues with other parents as well too. But you have to look at the silver lining, which is kind of what you were talking about. You know, mm-hmm. for me, it's, I'm an amazing father because I know what not to do. You know, I've worked really hard at doing that. And I'm very, you know, for good or bad, I'm very critical of myself as a father, which is, I'm probably a little too hard on myself sometimes, but that's a really important core value for me, is being a good dad. So I think it's part of that healing process that you described. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something you were talking about a little bit earlier. You said you didn't realize how depressed you were until it kind of hit you. Mm. So my question is, what was like the rock bottom moment for you? And do you think it was being masked as anger while you were younger because of those abandonment issues?
I would say my real rock bottom was I had made six figures. So I'd made $100,000 at 26 years old with no college degree. And I spent 10 months on the road living in hotels for my job. I was in the construction industry. It's called weatherization, but construction is the best way to explain it. And I was on the road constantly and I was burning the candle at every single end. I was living on fast food and energy drinks. Genuinely, I was drinking two or three monsters a day.
Sounds like you're in the army. Like I was,
it was brutal.
Absolutely energy drinks.
Right. Yeah. And I remember it's almost like after I opened my pay stub, I stopped caring about my job because I had started a podcast that I was having deep conversations, very similar to what we're talking about today. And I finally found like I finally felt like I was having an impact in the world, which I had never felt like before. And I felt aligned. I felt like I had a purpose and I stopped caring about my job. The year before, yeah, I was on the road for 10 months, but I liked it because I was making a boatload of money. And that was what I was intending on. That was my alignment. And it was really hard for me to keep showing up and keep struggling and keep suffering and keep grinding. And I just kept wanting to quit and I wanted to leave and I knew it wasn't for me, but I never did it. I never had the courage to do it. In my rock bottom basement moment, I woke up in New Jersey, which was 6 hours away from where I lived, in a crusty hotel. I woke up, I slid to the edge of the bed. I was lacing up my work boots, getting ready for the day. And the best way to explain it, Tony, and maybe you'll resonate with this, I'm sure you will in some way, there was 10 televisions on in my head at the same time, and every single one was on a different station. And they were just like, you're stuck here forever. Too bad you want to leave. You're never going to make this kind of money again. What will your friends think? What will your family think? Do you really think you can be a successful podcaster? That's not going to happen. That doesn't happen for you. That happens for other people. And in that moment, that was another one of those times where I genuinely wanted to take my life. I didn't have a plan. But I did not want to exist. I said, I cannot live like this anymore. I'd rather take my life and take my problems with me than deal with this. That was my rock bottom basement moment.
I think you touched on something I think really important there is this negative self-talk that you described that you were going through. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we can be our own worst enemies. And especially if you don't have like a strong support system around you to pull you out of that, it becomes like an echo chamber. And you're reinforcing these thoughts as facts and, you know, you start to believe them. You very much believe them. I think it's a huge problem that a lot of people have. So when you were talking earlier, you said one of your main motivations was you were concerned that your girlfriend was going to leave you and, you know, how supportive she was. Tell me about the importance of having a support system. And also beyond it, was there something beyond your girlfriend? What was your motivation to keep going to like overcome this anxiety and depression? And then obviously it went beyond that and you kind of like turned that into a huge business. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So one of the things, and this is definitely, it was ego at the time, but I have never quit tattooed on my arm. And I remember thinking to myself, like, God forbid I was to take my life. And again, this was ego, but it helped. Somebody comes, like the paramedics and the police, and I have a never quit tattoo on my arm and I quit. Like, that can't happen. I can't do that. So, you know, ego part of me, that was part of it. I think that the community aspect, the circle aspect, what it does is for me at least, it allowed me to visualize a brighter future. I am convinced that that's the biggest thing that shifted for me is I had conversations with people who said, I know you feel like you're in the shadow, but that's not how it has to be forever. And they gave me different perspectives. And some people actually shined a light that helped me, right? They brightened my mood. They lit up what I felt had to be dark. That was huge for me. And I think that having the, and this is one of the words I use, having the vulnerability and that kind of connection with somebody allowed me to just say the truth, even though I was terrified to say it. I think that we assume our thoughts are these private things that we can't tell people because you'll get judged or people will look at you differently. What it did was it validated my feelings. It was like, oh, these are actually real feelings that people have. I'm not the only person who's ever felt this way. So that was super important for me. I think that when I had that moment sitting on the edge of the bed, when I pulled through that, what I ended up doing, I ended up leaving my job 3 or 4 months later. I've never had a feeling like that since. I've been depressed and I've had moments of like, I'm not feeling it today, or sure, I don't want to get out of bed. Trust me, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I will always have improvement to work on. But I think what happened is now I actually have the hope of a brighter future. And I never had that before. Even when I was making money, even when I had nice things, I always assumed I was going to lose it. I always assumed I was lucky. I always assumed that there was a termination time where all that was going to leave me. So my community has helped me be vulnerable and share with them and not judge me based on that. I truly believe the level of your relationships are directly correlated to the level of vulnerability you have in them. Because if you can't live in your truth, it's very hard to live with yourself.
That's so true. And I think something that resonates with a lot of people. And I think like a good way to look at it is if you're trying to make progress in your life, I think the only way to do it is to be vulnerable and to be a little bit uncomfortable. And I'll talk just like about just starting a podcast or a blog in general, or, you know, if you think back to anything in your life, listeners, think about a time when you tried to start something, but you didn't want to tell your friends or immediate family about it. You know, like I avoided putting it on LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever for a while there. And so I was finally like, no, you know what? Like, I'm going to go all in on this because I believe in it. And I think that belief that you talked about is really a huge key to change. And I think a lot of people, whatever it is they want to do, they're sitting there looking at like, well, I can't, you know, make this into a business, or I can't, you know, run a marathon or do whatever. That's for other people. Like, even though you may watch success stories and they tell you kind of like what their process was, it's hard to get over that hurdle. And the only way that I've been able to do it in my experience was through this process of ACT therapy, where you kind of identify what your value is and take a committed action toward it. So like, it's really small. And I'm sure my listeners are sick of this story, but you know, my small thing is I coached my son's soccer team, had a ton of anxiety about it, but it ended up going great. And I ended up being a really good coach. And once I did it, I was like, holy shit, I can do all this other stuff. It like unlocks that glass ceiling. And once you break through that, it's amazing what you can achieve. And you talk about consistency. So tell me, like, when it comes to being successful, tell me about this idea of consistency and like what your process is like. What do you think is important in that?
Yeah, I don't always advise people do what I do because, again, to your point, Tony, my goal, my why power is to, and this is what we play for every day, it's to bring holistic self-improvement to the masses. And we're trying to build a company that's going to change the world. So my level of consistency and commitment is going to be different than most. And I want to make sure that I highlight that. But I think that if you can break it down into health, wealth, and love, and you can focus on one small thing every single day, small does not, to your point, small does not have to be big. Imagine if every day when you woke up, you weighed yourself, you tracked your finances, and if you have a partner, at the end of the night, you said one thing you were grateful for about each other. If you don't have a partner, you said one thing you're grateful for about yourself. Those three things might take you all of 15 minutes a day. Those things, if you can do them consistently, will change your life because you'll get to the point where you can add three more habits and then three more habits. Without consistency, almost nothing is possible. With consistency, getting to your potential is. I won't say anything is possible because I don't believe I'm going to beat LeBron James at basketball. I'm 5'5" and I can't shoot to save my life. So that's probably not going to happen. But if I'm consistent, I can be the best basketball player I can be. I can be the best speaker, podcaster, coach, whatever I can be. I think that one of the things that helps me is just admitting that sometimes it sucks. Being consistent is hard and it sucks.
100%.
I don't want to sugarcoat it. It sucks. Yeah. But like we talked about earlier, the perceived pain of not doing it has to be higher than the pain or perceived pain of doing it. And here's a great example. So I have a co-host, co-founder, CEO, Alan. Alan and I are bodybuilders. And we've been building the business and pouring into our relationships. Our bodies have been less of a focus. So we were on a podcast episode recently, and we said, we're going to make a commitment device. So what a commitment device is, it's something that helps you stay more consistent and accountable. So imagine if you had somebody in your family who got lung cancer because they smoke cigarettes and you hate tobacco and you hate the tobacco industry. Either you will accomplish your goal by set date or you will donate $100 to the biggest tobacco company in the world. The perceived pain of donating $100 to something you don't believe in will help your why power for you to show up every day. So Alan and I said, if we do not hit these weights by August 1st, we do not get to record an episode of the podcast. We have never missed an episode in 1,000. We will not miss. If Alan misses his weight, I do the episode alone. If I miss my weight, Alan does the episode alone. So we created a commitment device. The pain of us not doing it is way greater than the pain of us dieting for a month or 3 months or whatever it is. So that has helped us remain consistent. And I know a lot of people, they don't like to do the public accountability because there's a lot of self-worth hits and self-esteem hits that come with that. That just goes back to my point about your circle. If you cannot tell your circle your goals and your dreams, not from a place of because you're not courageous enough, because of a place of they might judge you, I think you really need to check in with your circle, because you got to be able to tell your circle what you're doing in life.
I think that's an interesting strategy you bring up. And I could see how that would work for some people, but I want to go back to what you said earlier, is that what works for me doesn't necessarily work for mm-hmm. you. And I think that would probably be the case for, a group of people given that, because if you don't have, loving kindness towards yourself and self-compassion, yeah. I would imagine that strategy would be difficult to implement and be successful. But I do agree with your premise on consistency. That's how you build a habit. That's how you make a habit stick, is by doing it every day. I talk about persistence a lot. Like, that's the way to make a goal work. And it can be really, really hard to do. Again, going back to saying, like, not everything works for every person. Mm. It took me a year to start this podcast because I was dealing with chronic daytime sleepiness issues and health issues. And I had to go through the steps and go through the doctor. It's like, okay, well, this doctor tried this and that didn't work. And well, okay, let's try this and that didn't work. And, it's trial and error, trying different doctors. But that persistence helped me get over that hump. And then I finally got it under control where, okay, now I have enough energy to work on this every day. Mm-hmm. And now I'm passionate enough to do that every day. So I think that's a really important key, is it's this idea of leveling up, like these building blocks. You have to get to baseline good. And I think no matter what it is, whether it's I want to run a marathon, I want to lose weight, whatever, the most important thing that anybody can do for themselves first is getting their head right. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first key to expanding all that everything else.
And I appreciate that reframe too, because that's the thing, is my association with pain, like putting myself in pain, is a fairly positive one, where it's not for most people. I'm okay with suffering and putting myself through suffering, but I wasn't always. And I think that's a very good reframe. And I appreciate that, because I don't want somebody to do something that's not going to be good for them based on something that I do for myself. So I do appreciate that reframe.
Yeah, you have to be mentally strong. And I do think there's a lot of value in what you're saying. And I think that if you get to that point where you're in the right mind space and you're in the right headspace, it could be a very good catalyst for some really radical self-improvement and some really, quick, some big leaps in your journey and getting from, maybe I've had some success in this, but I really want to get here.
Yeah.
I think that strategy could be, very, very effective.
Yeah.
Have you seen that with people that you've worked with?
What usually works better for other people is accountability. So having a peak performance partner, that's huge. So everybody, we have a 16 person team, and everybody on our team tracks their habits. And we all track our habits, and because it helps everybody be more accountable. Everybody can see what I do. Everybody on the team can look at my habits and say, Kevin's got 100% or Kevin did 50%. As much as I'd like to say I'm just a very consistent human being, the reason I do it is because I know everybody else can see it. And that's just the truth. The ego aside, I do it because I am a natural people pleaser and I want to look good. I want to look good. So if you can find a peak performance partner or a group that will give you loving accountability. I think that's a good place to be, because that way it's, look, yeah, maybe you didn't hit what you wanted to hit, but first of all, give yourself grace and then get back on the horse tomorrow. Don't beat yourself up, because if you beat yourself up, you're not going to be in a mental place to do it anyway. So I do. I think it's a fine line between giving yourself pain and giving yourself grace. It's a fine line, and it's personal for each person.
Yeah, you definitely have to understand, like, from your own perspective, where you're at, where you want to go, and how you want to get there. You know, I can relate to what you're saying. I have ADHD, and if there's not a deadline, I have a hard time getting it done. So, like, having an accountability partner for whatever the goal is, it's very, very motivating to make sure that you're hitting those targets. But at the same time, like you said, you have to have, like, that love and kindness. You have to have that grace and understand, like, well, why didn't I do that? Well, because I'm dealing with whatever medical issue or, you know, whatever's going on in your life right now. You have to understand those circumstances. So on that note of talking about, you know, what's right for you, I do want to go further down into kind of your philosophy. And you talk about this no BS approach to self-improvement. Tell me a little bit about that.
So it's hard. It's a fine line. But one of the biggest things that I have seen that I think negatively impacts people, and again, this is my belief and this is what I've seen, but you see posts of like, well, everything's going to work out. And I just don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true. I believe that what's going to work out is what you work on. And I want to, our brand is heart-driven. I love you and I want to give you the best advice possible. And I want you to have the most success you can, but no BS. I can't lie about what I think it'll take, and at least what it's taken from us. And the other part of the no BS is there's a lot of people who they only go one layer deep. So as an example, we had somebody on the podcast one time, and she's very spiritual, and I love that. And she's talks a lot about manifestation, and I love that too. But she said, well, you know, when I got in alignment with my best self, the weight just melted off. And I didn't have the courage in that interview to say, did it really though, or did you make lifestyle changes? Because that's a little bit misleading. I was a personal trainer for years. I understand the law of thermodynamics, and I know that that's not how it works. But if somebody takes that advice and they think, well, I'm in alignment and I'm not losing weight, what's going on? I just think that it's not empowering for people. If you think it's all going to work out, you don't take necessary actions to make it work out, and then it doesn't work out, you might assume you're broken, when realistically, you just haven't imparted the strategy that is necessary to actually accomplish that. So when we say no BS, that's what we mean. I don't want to tell people that it's going to be easier than it is, because I think that sets people up for failure. I want to tell people that it's going to be a challenge, but it will be worth it. And it's going to take work, but it will be worth it. And it's going to take consistency, but you can do it. And this is my favorite thing, but I know it's hardcore. Maybe you're not going to change the world, but that's okay. You can change your own. You can change somebody else's. Maybe that's not what you were put here for.
Some really important things there. And I agree with pretty much everything that you're saying here. I think no matter what it is that you're trying to achieve or trying to live your life towards, you have to be honest with yourself about what challenges you're facing, what's going to be possible, what's not going to be possible, and what it takes to overcome. And so you need to either be able to have those hard conversations with yourself and know how to guide yourself, or find a coach or a therapist or whoever who's going to do that, but with compassion. And it sounds like that's like what your team does. And I commend you for that, because I think that's an important part of it. You have to have that compassionate support, but you also have to have, you know, radical candor, no BS, like you're talking about. And I also think, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier about things that work for others and, you know, comparing yourself to other people, don't compare yourself to other people. You know, like you talked about, you're never going to beat LeBron James, and that is true. And as a Clevelander, I can say, you know, we're huge fans of him here. But you can be a better basketball player than you were yesterday, mm-hmm. and the day before that, and the day before that. And it's not like, you know, progress is not like this hockey stick graph. It's kind of like Bitcoin. It goes up and down and up and down and up and down. But if you look at it over time, like, it goes up, and you have to have that mindset and realize, like, you're going to have shitty days, you're going to have shitty weeks. Like, it's going to take time to get over these things.
Yeah. We always say that, Tony. If you're comparing to somebody on social media, this is the problem. You're comparing your real feelings to somebody else's filtered. Yeah. It's like the highlights that are already filtered, and you're feeling bad about yourself in your own truth. And it's like, there's just way too much contrast. They have bad days too. And I know because I know them. So it's like, that's been the most beautiful thing for me, getting to see behind the scenes of certain people, is they all have their own stuff. They all have their own struggles, but they don't necessarily post about it because that's not part of their brand. And you have to understand that it's important to feel your feelings, and everybody does.
Yeah, you have to find like what your starting point is too. And so like, if self-image is a huge problem for you, or if you're really struggling with comparing yourself to other people, then I recommend, like, I call it burnout first aid. So you may not, if you're struggling with this, you may not classify it as burnout, but if you're obsessed with social media and you're always on your phone or whatever, then you need like a break for it. You know, like I went backpacking in the woods for a weekend and had no cell service. And that's how I came up with this method. It was like, basically you have to lock your phone up, like not contact anybody, only have close friends nearby for like 2-3 days, but it works. It, like, you need that reset so that you can get going. Yeah. And that may not be the thing that you need if, you know, if that's not your issue, but you got to figure out what that thing is and kind of take that action. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, this idea of like being realistic about what you're trying to do and can you actually do it? And that's why I love talking about values so much, because if you're like me, you know, I have a goal of backpacking the Grand Canyon one day. I'm not in the physical shape to do that right now. I have back issues and a heart issue, and I have to get cleared by doctors, and I have to get to that point. And it may be something that I can never do, but I know that the value behind that is adventure. Mm-hmm. So if I can't do that, then I'm going to adjust my life. I'm still going to live my life towards that value of adventure, but I may not hike the Grand Canyon. I might kayak, you know, Big Bend River, the Rio Grande or whatever, and do that thing. I think that's a really important distinction that a lot of people don't think about when they're goal setting.
Yeah. I think that one of the best things that ever happened to me was I quote unquote found success. And then I realized, oh no, this isn't actually success because it's not within my core values and my core beliefs. I had somebody come to me one time and they said, hey, I want to do what you've done. And I want to have a podcast that's like one of the biggest in the world. And I was like, awesome. And I said, first of all, I can only tell you what it's taken us to get here. I don't know what it's going to take you to get to your, you know, your top. And this person said, I want to be like Gary Vee. And I was like, okay, I can imagine what that's like. I don't know. And I said, so how important is family to you? And they're like, oh, 10 out of 10. Like, I have to be able to walk my kid to the bus every day. And I said, okay, I just want you to understand that Gary Vee is on the road, like, you know, 2/3 of the year.
Right. And
yes, there's other ways around that, but I don't think you've weighed this with your core values. I think that you're weighing this more on aspiration.
Right. 100%.
And you just have to check in on that.
Yeah.
And that conversation changed everything for that person. It's just, yeah, to your point, maybe it's not Mount Everest. Maybe it's a different mountain, but it's still the same journey for you of, I want to get to the peak. That's great. It doesn't matter.
It's what life do you want to live? Like, who do you want to be every day when you get out of bed? It's like, the problem with goals is it's like, I'm nothing until I hit this goal. Then I hit, if you actually hit the goal, which only like 8% of people do, then the problem becomes, oh shit, I hit this goal. Now what?
Yeah.
But if you live your day with intention and value every single day, then you're living a life of purpose. And I think like that just goes over so many people's heads because it's just nobody talks about this.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody is putting this out there in the public in a, like with a big enough megaphone to make people understand that. So you've had a really successful podcast. You parlayed that into a big business. Tell me about that success and kind of what inspired you to help others succeed.
Yeah, I think that. So when we started the podcast, I always say that a lot of people have their P's in the wrong order. So they put, they go into something for profit. I did not start this to make money. So much, in fact, that there was a point where we were like, hey, we have to start making money. So I started this to impact people. One of the first conversations I ever had on the podcast was with one of my buddies who I went to school with, who one day decided he wanted to take his life. And I interviewed him about that day. And he ended up calling me that day. And he said, hey, I'm having suicidal thoughts. Will you come to the hospital with me? And I said, yeah, man, I'm there. Let's do it. And we talked about that on our podcast. And I remember after that episode, I was like, wow, that is some real stuff. Like, that was such a real, vulnerable, authentic conversation. Anybody who hears that, that can change their life. That for me was it. Like, I was hooked after that. And it, when you fast forward, you know, when I left my job, I had $10,000 in the bank. I lived with a buddy. I was paying $500 a month. My bills were pretty low. I ended up getting $30,000 into debt, credit card debt. trying to build the business. And then one day, Alan and I were talking and I said, I need to start getting clients or something. I need to start making money. So for us, it was way more necessity than anything. We've always wanted to help people at a deep, deep level. Now, at least we have the understanding and the belief that yes, it is about impact, but if you don't have profitability, you cannot re-impact and you can't pour it back into the business. So it was very much for us, Tony, how do we help people at a deep level, as well as so breadth and depth? How do we help many people, but how do we try to help people as deeply as possible? And that's really, I would say, the key to our success, but also the way we've set up our business. So it feels really good to do it that way.
How do you balance that? You know, because I know it can be hard when you're thinking in terms of like profit, balancing between, okay, I'm going to do a self-service online course versus coaching versus maybe like a coached course. And, you know, there's certain levels where you have to figure out, okay, what makes sense financially, but what is best for people? Because those things will pay different, you know, depending on what you're doing. So how do you strike that balance in your business?
I think a lot of it comes from the understanding that usually, in a weird way, usually the path of least resistance is the path of least profit. So like, yeah, we could do an online course for, you know, $1,500 and try to sell it, but it's not going to work like people say. That's the other thing is like, if it was that easy, everybody would just do it. Everybody would just do it. So we have balanced it out. And again, to your point, it's through our core values, our core beliefs, and our core aspirations. My core value as a human being is to become the most extraordinary version of me possible, but never to forget what it was like not to be. AKA, I don't ever want to forget what it's like to not believe in yourself. I still have that every day, so I don't think that's going away anytime soon. I don't want to forget what it's like not to have the courage to start a podcast or go up to somebody or have a conversation. So for me, it's very important to me to have one-on-one conversations with people. That's just who I am as a human. With Alan, we've actually had to like limit the amount of time he's doing that because he's building the business behind the scenes. So we're blessed that there's two of us, but I think you have to run it through your core values and your core beliefs, because you could make all the money in the world, but if it's not sustainable with your personality and what you want as a human being, it's not sustainable long term. So I think it depends. It depends on you.
I think that's incredibly true. And I think, you know, when you're talking about mental health and helping people improve, you have to have your heart in it for sure. You know, I know for me, the hugest inspiration of starting this was, For most of my life, I was like, therapy, it's never going to work. Like, I'm never going to get better. And then I actually did it. And I was like, I have got to help other people know that this is possible, because yeah. I was like the biggest naysayer. I was like, I'll never get there. And I did it. And so that was like a huge inspiration for me. And it's great to hear that like that's kind of your business model too, is like, that sounds like it's a really core component to what you're trying to do, is that human level.
Yeah, I just think that Alan and I grew up, both of us, without fathers. There was a lot of ego around. And I believe that if I had self-improvement when I was younger, I might not have gotten to the point where I was at. So that really is the mission for us, is to bring it to everybody. I want to make it accessible and acceptable. Like, self-improvement is still this weird voodoo thing where it's like, what, are you in a cult? It's like, yeah. What do you mean? I'm just trying to get better. I don't know why that's a bad thing. I'm trying to get better. So that's one of our missions is, look, it's good. Like, this is good stuff. The self-awareness, the retrospective looking into yourself, like, it's so important to reflect and try to improve as a human being, whatever that means. I take it very personally. I take it very, very, very personally, where I just want to help people, oftentimes to a detriment. Like, you know, I shouldn't stay up as late as I do answering DMs, but that's why I started this. So I don't want to not answer my DMs. That's not why I'm doing this. I'm not doing this so I can have an assistant who does that. That's not why I started.
You talked a little bit too about how, you know, you're always going to be on that self-improvement journey, and yes, kind of like what led you to this mindset. And that's, I think, where my gratitude comes into play too. You know, it sucks having a father not being around. It sucks being depressed and angry most of your life. It was my mid-30s when I finally got better. But I'm very grateful for that experience, because had I not gone through all that, I probably wouldn't have had the self-improvement catalyst. And even if you didn't struggle the way you and I struggled, there's always things that happen in your life that you can take a hard look at and build upon. And I think like that's key. Like, have the gratitude, know your values, and use a framework to make that change.
One of the best things about being a podcaster, and I know you're earlier, but this is something that you're going to see forever, is everybody has had some level of adversity. And the people who used it as an advantage, they're the ones who often talk about it the most. And again, it's not an overnight thing. It's taken years and years and years. But the understanding that everybody has experienced something, yeah. I think that that can be an empowering belief. And it doesn't mean they've experienced, quote unquote, more or lessens what you've been through. It's just everybody has had experiences that have been challenging. And that's a good thing to know, because it's just empowering. You're not alone in your struggles. You're not alone in the limiting beliefs or your fears. Everybody has dealt with them in some way. And I think that's been one of the most impactful things of hearing other people's stories.
Yeah, we did an episode on trauma. And like, it doesn't necessarily matter what you experience, because everybody's lens is different. So mm-hmm. something that may not be a big deal to somebody else might be a huge deal to you and like affect your life. And that goes back to another big theme that we've been talking about, is this idea of, you know, compare yourself to who you were the day before and continually build and improve upon that.
100%. 100%.
So, Kevin, where can people find you? You know, how can they connect with you? You know, let the people know.
Sure. I appreciate that. If you like what Tony and I talked about, we have a podcast called Next Level University. We do 7 episodes a week. So every single day in your pocket for free. You can find us on any of the podcast platforms as well as YouTube. And if you want to reach out to me, my handle on Instagram is @neverquitkid. So I would love to chat with you. Please feel free to send me an audio, video, whatever you need.
Yeah. And bonus tip, if you want to achieve stuff, just get Never Quit tattooed on your arm. You can't quit literally, because you'll be too embarrassed to do it.
It helps. It definitely, there's times where I'm like in a heavy, difficult workout and I look at it and I say, okay, come on. It's on your skin. You can't not do this.
Well, I love it. All right, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was great talking with you. Hopefully we'll get a chance to connect again, and I will put all of his information in the show notes for anyone who's interested. Kevin, thanks. Any last words before we go? Anything I didn't ask you that you want to add?
Oh, man. No, I think that's it. We talked a little bit about habits and consistency. I'll say the biggest difference between the person you are today and the person you are in the future is your habits. So just try to pick up one new habit this week, whatever it is, one new behavior, and that can change a lot. So that's what I would say. Tony, this has been wonderful. I have nothing but love for you, brother. I can feel that big heart from here. And this was a genuine pleasure for me.
Same to you. Thanks, Kevin.
Of course.
I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, be sure to subscribe so that you're notified every time a new one is posted. Also, please rate, review, and share this podcast, because the more we talk about mental health, the better life can get for those who struggle. Now, please join me in taking one small step towards a calmer day with a 2-minute meditation. Start by taking a relaxed but alert posture. If you're driving, continue to focus on the road, and if you're not, feel free to close your eyes or relax your gaze. Feel the weight of your body as gravity connects you to the earth and makes you feel grounded. Relax the muscles in your face, your neck, your shoulders, and the rest of your body. Now let's begin to shift your focus to the breath. Take a deep breath and follow it as it fills your lungs. Exhale slowly and let it all out. Continue to take long, slow breaths, paying attention as it enters your body and brings you calm as it leaves. If your mind is wandered off, slowly bring your attention back to the breath. Now, relax your attention. Take this calming energy with you as you go about your day. Thanks for listening. I hope you join me next time.